This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. The world of lace sellers is fragrant and fragile. We put lace sellers front and center today. I'm joined by HPR's Bill Dorman as we explore the history of lace sellers at the airport. We also hear from lace sellers in Chinatown about the changes they've seen. And joining us this morning in studio is Greg Pye, former state economist, whose family farmed the hills of Wilhelmina Rise, growing carnations for the lay industry. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're talking past, present, and future of our lay industry. What would we do without our lay makers? Bill, when was the last time you picked up a lay?
Within the last couple of weeks, downtown, actually, Chinatown.
Okay, that's where I picked up mine last week. What about you, Greg?
A couple of weeks ago, probably at Times Supermarket.
Okay, there you go. Well, you know, as we mentioned, lay making has been part of Hawaii for generations, and those generations have faced difficult challenges over the years. Our partners at the Center for Oral History at UH Manoa have put together some recollections from years past. And Bill, share some of those highlights.
Yeah, this is really interesting. You know, lay making, Catherine, in Hawaii, truly a generational story, and you're going to be hearing the voices of many who lived through the evolution of this business, or at least part of it. The interviews were all done with airport lay sellers in 1985, but the stories themselves go back many years before that. Sandra Santamer was born in Honolulu in 1941. Her family was Hawaiian, Chinese, Caucasian. She was raised by her grandparents in Kalihi, and her grandmother sold lay downtown, and they were part of that crush of boat day. You know, when the passenger ships would come in down at the waterfront. She worked downtown with her grandmother and later at the airport, and she eventually inherited her grandmother's business at the airport, which was Rachel's Lay Stand.
Can you tell us about what your grandmother did?
She went into being a lace seller at the boat and at Mauna Kea Street. See, I was about maybe about 10, 11 years old when I was at Mauna Kea Street with her.
Did she have a shop on
she
Mauna Kea
She had a shop
Street?
On Mauna Kea Street.
Oh, what was the name of her shop?
She didn't have a name on it. See, most of the lace sellers at Mauna Kea Street did not have a name for their business.
Oh, but see, they were in a building?
But they were outside on the sidewalk.
Oh, I see.
In the front of, you know, of businesses.
So they would just have their lace out on the sidewalk? Did they have tables?
We had tables. We had like a long board with nails on it. Then we just put our lace on.
Oh, hanging down.
Then we had a little box thing that we put our feet into. And we used wooden box, to put our flowers in. We didn't have those cardboard to put our flowers inside those days. Just cardboard or, you know, bikinis.
Uh-huh.
And to wet the lays, we just have water. We had a faucet, like, in a lane. Go and get water, and we had our ice boxes in the lane, too.
Oh.
Where we have to go and take, you know, after we close, because, say, we start about 7 o'clock in the morning, and we get through about 8, 9 o'clock at night. Just put all the lays in the back, lock it all up, get our water, get our bucket water, put it in the front and wet the lays, dip it up and down, you know, shake it and then just put it on our display board.
Now when you first were on Mauna Kea Street, were you buying your flowers?
Oh yes, we were buying from the growers.
So you didn't have any backyard farmers coming down there?
Not too many of them, not too many. Maybe like my grandma had this lady from Damon Trap. She used to bring our suppliers with plumeria lace. And papakulea, we have crown flowers, and nanakuli crown flowers we used to have. They used to just bring it already strung, so it'd be easier for us just to sell, huh?
Yeah.
Especially boat days. Just take it straight down to the boat. My grandma would take so much in her bikini.
Did she normally sell all the lace that she took?
Normally she sold all her lace. And those days were like, you could get even 10 for a dollar.
Wow.
That's how cheap the lace were. Really was a tremendous, and you see the amount of lays that all the lace sellers had, and beautiful plumeria lays. You know, they just had all the different colors, natural colors that would be sold. And I mean, they just have them in armful of each one of them down the row. Ten full dollar. This is bargaining with, you know, the customers bargaining with them. Then before you know, before the boat ready to leave, they want to just get rid of them. So they go $24. That's it. And they really made, I mean, those days money were a lot to them, although it was cheap, you know, but every dollar was a dollar.
Ten for a dollar, 20 for a dollar when the timing got tight for inventory. Geez, that was a little while back, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, you know, as we listen to these interviews, one consistent factor is family. That's true for Harriet Kaave, who was born in 1933. She grew up in Kakaako, and along with her siblings, she helped make Lae, sell them downtown, and of course, on the waterfront, on boat day with everybody else. She was Hawaiian Portuguese. Her family moved to Kalihi in later years. Her mother moved the business to the airport before she retired in 1965. And that was, again, in the early days of a lot of movement here. Harriet took over the business, renamed it Harriet's Lae Stand. But she also recalled earlier years when the entire family pitched in, including her father.
My father worked for city and county. Mm-hmm. He worked for the road department. He drove the sweeper. Mm. Yeah. And my mother, well, she was a lace seller. Mm. She sold lace down at the pier, and my father was a help to her. And
how did he help her?
Well, after work, he was the one that got all of us kids. I mean, we were pretty young then, till we moved. And then we were able to help string lace, but he went down to the pier and helped her get the flowers going and all that.
Can you explain how they prepared their lace to go to the boat? How did they pick up their flowers? And where did they string their lace?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? When we were able to help my mom and dad, my father used to drive us around because they didn't have flowers like they have today. And what we did, we went as far as Waipahu and Schofield. And along the highway, they have bougainvilleas. Mm-hmm. And they had this hibiscus. And we used to pick all, you know, I mean, we used to kind of hide because it's on the highway. But these are the flowers that we used to have, and we used to pick plumerias. Mm-hmm. But when we moved to Demon Track, we planted about 40 or 50 trees of crown flowers. Mm-hmm. And we raised our own nasturtiums and our own marigold, okuloi oi oi, that. And these are the flowers that we used. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, as kids, we really worked hard because we had to pick all those flowers.
Yeah. Did you mm-hmm. buy any flowers?
Yes, my mother then bought from people, farmers at Kuli'o'o. It's just below the Lunalilo rest home mm-hmm. in that area. It was all, that's where all our carnations came from. Mm. And we used to go up there, and all the other type of flower, like the blue hydrangeas and the pansies and the gingers and gardenias, all came from Manoa. Mm. Because in those days, that's where the farm was, in Manoa. So we used to go up there and get all the flowers.
Do you see a change in the way the business is run since the old folks have gone?
I don't think so. I think it's the same thing. You know, I don't think any of us will be millionaires. We get too much aloha, you know, in us. There's time if they have, you know, if the ladies get 1 day, 2 day old, we always, you know, you buy wine, we always give. And mm-hmm. then we see somebody we didn't see long time, oh, put a lay on, you know. So we used to laugh a lot. We sit down and go, you know, us Hawaiians, we'll never be millionaires, but that's all right. We're happy because we get so much love, you know, in us. And I think that's the main thing. I guess my mom was like that too, you know. There's so much love that I think that's what makes us Hawaiians.
You really feel the aloha in these interviews. That interview with Harriet done 1985, maybe a few years after getting flowers from the highway, but Harriet was still selling lei at the airport.
That's amazing. You know, I know when I was down in Chinatown last week, I happened to talk to a family, third-generation family, Cindy's Lei Shop. They've been around 60 years. Karen Lee's grandmother, Anyen, she says, or her formal name is Lao Li Shi, that she started stringing flowers just in the back room of what was then a barber shop. So it was very casual, mm. you know, kind of like one yeah. of the other interviews said, oh, it was just a board with right. nails. So it was that kind of thing. And then the business just kind of blossomed. And, you know, she did lament that she worries about what's going to happen to lei selling in the future.
Inventory is dwindling, fewer people are farming, and the origin of the flower lei is the farm. And if people don't farm, I don't know how the flower lei is going to be sustained. And that's going to hurt the business of lei selling.
So you fear for the industry?
I do. I fear for the future. The future of Lay's. Not only from an entrepreneurial business standpoint, but like, I don't know what's going to be around, like say 50, 100 years from now. I think that the money is there. I think it's just going to be more like how are they going to allocate that responsibility? Who's going to do it? It's a real legitimate concern.
You know, so she talks about the flower farms and, you know, Greg, your family, your grandparents were involved in the carnation lay industry way back when.
Right, you know, and hearing these stories, it just strikes me and makes me feel very grateful to have been in such a wonderful tradition, you know, as far as, you know, the flower lay in Hawaii. It's just hearing these stories, I mean, I don't normally hear this, so it makes me feel really gratified, you know, to have been part of this history at some point in our lives.
And you had mentioned to me that your grandparents initially had gotten one of the first Model T
trucks. Right, yeah, well, these are stories that I just heard from my parents and my grandparents, but my grandfather, apparently his name was Kong Chi-sun, Chi-sun Kong, was apparently known as the Carnation King. And we had 50, I was told, 50 acres up on what is now Wilhelmina Rise. And at that time, apparently, it was known as the Korean Hill because there were lots of Koreans who went up there and established small farms. And there were a lot of small truck farms, a lot of vegetable farms. But apparently, carnation was the main sort of crop grown on the hill. If you go up Ivy Way, on the upper part of Ivy Way, you'll notice there's a road called Carnation Place. So that's testament to the fact that carnation was grown in that whole area. So yes, my mother used to tell us about having the first Model T Ford, I don't know in Honolulu or in the community, but and they used to go out, my uncle, my mother's older brother, and my mother used to go out and pick carnations as children. And they used to load them up and take them down to Mauna Kea Street and the harbor on boat days and sell the flowers to the laymakers. So that was the connection. I mean, the story that you just heard about the laymaker who bought the flowers, possibly, you know, her grandparents bought flowers from my grandparents. So yeah, it just made me feel that sense of connection to that history. It was just really powerful. Thank you for sharing this.
It is amazing when you hear the voices from back then and listen to their recollections, their memories.
Yeah. And those connections that span generations, and Greg, hearing you talk about stories of your grandparents, and that's such a community aspect of this with the flower lay.
Yeah, one thing I need to share too is my mother used to tell me that when they were growing up, the paved road used to end at Moilili. So from Moilili all the way out to Kaimuki and Wailai Avenue was a dirt road. And Kaimuki looked like something out of an old west, you know, Wild West movie with wooden sidewalks. And if you drove up Sierra Drive, it was all dirt. So on a rainy day, they had to slog up Sierra Drive through the mud, you know, and back down. So it was a whole different, it was a whole different environment in those days.
Well, if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about the history of lay sellers. You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Bill, you have voices to share?
Sure. Here are a couple of interviews with two women who go back a bit further even in the history of lay selling in Honolulu. Martina Makalina was born in Nu'uanu, 1917. So that was the year the Queen died. It was also the middle of World War One. Her mother sold lay. She helped. After her mother died in 1960, she and her sister took over her mother's lay stand, changed the name from Agnes's lay stand to Martina's lay stand. And she talks about how the work involved was not just selling lay at the stands or on waterfront on boat days, but also the getting of the flowers, which meant lots of hiking in the old days.
I know my mother how many years. I don't know when she sleeps or when she don't sleep. But she does yard work, I say. climb mountains, pick up all her greenery, come home with my father. See, Dad and her used to go up the mountain, pick up all the greenery. They go mostly for go pick up gingers, you know. Gingers, tea leaf, lawais, mylis, wawaioli. That's what you use when you braid the leaves.
The limo is wawaioli.
Well, they have that. You see, limo, same thing, this greenery that they pick from the mountain.
In the mountain?
Yeah.
It looks like that?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's exactly like it, you know. Oh. She used to pick all the pick all that. They have the mylis that we pick up the mountain. It's a small mylis. Mm-hmm. There's three kind of mylis. You know where the reservoir is? The new one up at
the new one.
Yeah. Okay, you have to go way inside. Mm-hmm. And as you go in, right along the bend, you can see the varieties of mylis.
Because you pick all the different varieties.
Oh yes, we used to have the long one, the square ones, the other ones. When my dad go, we get all the mylis because he's the one know how to pick them.
So when they pick up mylis, how much do they pick up?
Oh, by the bags. Maybe 5 bags.
Big bags.
Oh yeah. My dad used to come with 10 bags. People used to hammer the mylis, right? Yes, my husband. My father chewed his mylis. That's his here. He has beautiful teeth, that man. Nothing rotting about his teeth, you know. He had his whole set. He died with one teeth missing. Mm. But his whole set. He told me, gee, your father get nice set of teeth, all even. And he chewed mylis. And I tell you, Cracker Jack and chewing that mylis.
And why does he chew it?
To soften the mylis,
oh, yeah.
You have to, you know, you have to tie it. Uh-huh. And my mother had rather have him chew than you hammer. Mm. You hammer, you don't know how to handle it. You kill the mylis. Mm. You kill the loop where you braid. Mm-hmm. The kid come loose and fall off.
Mm.
But if you chew it, you actually don't chew too much, too hard. But you chew some of them, but you give enough to tie.
Mm.
My father said, oh, he chewed. You don't believe, he said, he chewed bags of mylis. Bags and bags. 3 bags, he chewed all by himself. We start in the morning, he chewed him like dying. I used to feel sorry for my dad.
How often did they have to go in the mountain?
Oh, mom used to go twice a week.
Wow.
Or maybe once a week. All depend how you pick up your, all depend on the boat, you know.
Chewing mylis from morning until night, you know, talk about dedication
that
in that this line of work. But they, you know, also again, so much depended on the boat and the demand side of that. How much you had to pick, how often you had to pick mylis. But the boat wasn't the only place to sell lei. Irene Sims, she was born in Kekaha in Kauai, 1915. She was Hawaiian Chinese. She came to Honolulu when she was 16 to attend Kamehameha schools. In the late 1940s, she started selling lei not only in the at the waterfront, but also in Waikiki, outside of Lau Yi Chai Restaurant. Long time, Greg, you're nodding your head on that. That was built in 1929. They knocked it down in 1966. If you're familiar with Waikiki, at this point, it's where the Ambassador Hotel is.
Yeah.
That location. But she used to sell lei around after-hours clubs, or what they called bottle clubs at the time. But then as travel patterns changed, she got word of a new opportunity.
I was told that at the airport was a place that was a good business place. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I should get a try and go down to the airport and make money down there.
And how many trucks were there when you went?
I think there were about 6, I think. Yeah, and I was number 7, that's right.
And when you went there, were you actually the 7th one in line?
Yes, and in other words, the last one.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they start from the beginning, and it's supposed to be when the people come in, they rather stop at the front stands.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that, you know, it's more easier or so whatever. So the people in the front are usually the ones that used to make the money.
Whoa.
Unless it's filled up, then they come down.
Whoa.
But, you know, The Navy used to have a boat by the name of the Mars. Mm-hmm. And that boat used to bring in good business for our sleigh selling at the airport.
Big difference between the
Yes, there are. You see, those people that were there a long time ago, before you have, maybe before I got there, had customers, you know, so many customers. They know that, like, Rachel was one of the most popular lay seller there. Why? Because she was established down at Mauna Kea Street. Mm. Okay, then they said, oh, go down to airport, you know, Rachel is down there. As another branch. Ooh. Rachel had tremendous business. But she's a nice person to begin with. Mm-hmm. Very nice, down-to-earth lady. One of the best lay sellers I knew down there. That's the lady that first rode the Cadillac at the airport.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Yes. She started buying Cadillacs every year.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, you know, and other, like, Onaga's wife also owned a Cadillac. Mm-hmm. And then I too owned a Cadillac. You can get a Cadillac maybe $4,000, $5,000. Mm. You know? So why not we ride in style? So we did.
Riding in style. Cadillacs.
<You're catty. laughs>
Yeah, Cadillacs for the lay sellers. That's probably a little while back, right? Irene was 70 years old. She sounds a little bit younger on that, but she was 70 years old when she spoke to the interviewers from the Oral History Center back in 1985.
You know, we do have a call coming in from Makiki, Bradford. You have a memory to share?
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hi. So what I wanted to say is my Aunt Martha started selling lays 1950s, and then both of you remember Auntie Martha. She was a really regal, beautiful Hawaiian lady, and she started selling leis at the old Honolulu Airport, and then prior to that, she sold leis in Waikiki and Kalakaua Avenue, and some evenings, she also sold lei at Aoi Chai Restaurant in Waikiki and on Fort Street Mall in front of Mackinac, and at the piers when the masses would come and go on Nimitz Highway. And also when the military ships would dock. We lost Auntie Martha in 1972. And now my cousin, Milan, has taken over the business. Now the business is slowing down at the airport. And what really concerns me is that people are forgetting all of the beautiful lay sellers, the beginning, the people who started this. Auntie Martha also started the Honolulu Lei Association. And if it wasn't for Auntie Martha, I think there wouldn't be a lei stand at the new airport and still ongoing. So I really want to honor her at this time and honor my aunt. She was a beautiful woman. I remember one time at the Aloha Week Parade when I was a little boy, she was honored at the lei making in this beautiful float. And the float was full of lei. It was beautiful. And there's Aunt Martha with her high head and her turtle boutonniere that she would wear in her hair all the time. And she would always wear black, because she was part of the Kahumanu Society. So I don't know if you remember Auntie Martha.
I don't know her, but gosh, what a wonderful slice of Hawaii history. Thank you so much for sharing that memory in her honor, that wonderful story about how the association got started. You know, I just checked with the Airports Division before we got on the air here, and I was told that there are only 10 lay sellers remaining, and there are 4 vacancies at the airport. So, trying times.
And that's, you know, the caller brings up another good point in terms of where this is right now. You know, with all of the reconstruction, redevelopment at the airport, the lay sellers kind of get lost in the mix. If you're not familiar with where to go and when to turn and That's got to be tough for them as well.
Yes, and I had actually had a hard time finding the lace setters. I know it's here somewhere, and I had to circle around a couple of times. And when I did reach out to DOT, they said, "Oh, we're working on the signage. We should be getting it this summer." I think it's up. I don't know for sure, but I know they were planning on getting those signs to help drive the business. You know, there was some concern about the rail construction there,
right.
You know, from what I know, the vacancies are simply retirements. So there's opportunity there if there's anybody who wants to continue to get into the business. I did talk to a gentleman, a second-generation lay seller in Chinatown. Tony Nguyen is with Lin's Lay on Mauna Kea. He said that his family has had to diversify. So not only do they do lay, but they do wreaths for funerals. They do provide lay for the halau when they have competitions. But he says it's a family business, and long hours are what makes it very challenging to stay in business.
Guys are here from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. sometimes, 7 days a week. I would say that's the biggest challenge.
And you have a young family, and so your family's here all the time too?
Yeah, they come. They come hang out after school, and, you know, they go home a little bit earlier, of course, for the kids, yeah.
And what changes have you seen since you were a young boy hanging around your parents' shop?
Yeah, I noticed the changes in the trends as far as the flower choices or flower availability that we have. For example, the Vanda Mauna Loa, for example, when I was a kid, there was tons of it. And nowadays, with the Thailand orchid, the purple orchid, it's kind of taken over the market as far as it being inexpensive, readily available, and we can get quantity. Back in the day, they had double carnation leaves as what they would wear to prom. And for me, I think that's pretty crazy because it's so big. But I guess as the trend changes, like for me, when I went to prom, I had a big cascading bouquet, for example. And nowadays, currently, all the kids want wristlets. So it tends to be getting smaller and smaller.
Interesting. So, you know, what's in style? What falls in and out of favor? The carnation lay was real big during your grandparents' time, Greg?
Yeah, you know, prior to our coming on, you had just shared a story, and I think it'd be great to be able to share it again because I think it really sort of signifies the economics of the business in the sense that in the old days when you and I were high school kids, if there was a prom or if there was any kind of special occasion, you know, having a double carnation lay was required. It was de rigueur. I mean, you couldn't go without a double carnation lay. But then since then, like you were saying, you know, it's now they started giving bouquets. And then now, currently, as the gentleman said, they're just giving little wristlets. And I think that's such a commentary on, you know, the social customs, the cultural customs in terms of how we, and the economics in terms of the affordability of a carnation lay. Of course, I'm speaking of carnations. But there's it's just a very, very sad commentary in terms of the social custom and the economics of it in terms of the supply and demand of carnations.
And the sellers that I talked to in Chinatown said nowadays when they get orders, it's for a retirement, mm-hmm. Or military ceremony, or something special for a politician, but the carnation making it's pricey. It's anywhere from $50 to $75, depending you know, the time of the year. And when I asked about sellers locally, I was told, oh, there had been one on Maui. I don't know if they're still in business. Mm-hmm. They said they hadn't gotten any flowers from them in a while, and they get most of their carnations from South America.
Wow. Yeah.
So even California, they said, has cut back.
Yeah, you know, that's another way in terms of change, talking about sourcing of not only the different kinds of flowers, mm-hmm. but also the locations that those come from and,
exactly.
and the speed in terms of which it's changed
right.
the nature of flower growing in the islands.
Right.
Greg, that's something that you've had to have seen.
Well, it's a commentary on globalization. I mean, this is what globalization is. I mean, where literally, you know, we talk about the big box retailers coming in and wiping out, you know, local small businesses. Well, you know, the economics of transportation are making it such that, you know, getting carnations from South America is cheaper than growing them on Wilhelmina Rise.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, It's just a commentary on the times, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. If you got a favorite lay memory to share, you can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Bishop Museum's Spineless Wonders, Rising from the Deep, an exploration of marine invertebrates with images by Susan Middleton, open September 21st, bishopmuseum.org.
Share a little aloha this September. With Foodland's annual matching gift program, your donation is matched by Foodland and the Western Union Foundation. When you're at the register of a Foodland, Sac & Save, or Foodland Farm store anytime this September, remember Hawaii Public Radio and give aloha.
Hi, I'm DJ Mr. Nick of Bridging the Gap. This week, my co-hosts and I are pulling out our turntables and hosting an all-vinyl week. So stay up late and hear all the crackle and pop of our favorite dusty grooves. Tune into Bridging the Gap this Monday through Friday from 10 to midnight here on HPR1.
With The Conversation, and we're going to head out to Kaneohe for a call from Michelle.
Well, aloha, everyone.
Aloha.
Oh, I'm just loving the stories. And, you know, it's still special when I can go down to Mauna Kea and actually get a lei from my favorite lei seller, Cindy's, or my other favorite lei shop, Lynn's Leis. Lynn especially, oh my goodness, I hadn't been down there in probably 5 years, and I stopped in, and she remembered me, and I was buying, I forget what occasion I was buying lei for, but she popped one over my head and said, I haven't seen you in a long time, and this is for you.
Oh,
I mean, that's just so special, but you know, it's so hard, with the traffic is so bad. And, you know, it's like you almost need to have somebody to ride shotguns so that they can go circle the block while you go in and buy a lei, you know, down on Mauna Kea Street now. But
yes.
I just wanted to share that, you know, actually going to Chinatown and buying a lei is still kind of a special experience. You know, I can pop into Target, Long's, Times, Safeway, wherever, but... And it's still nice. There's still nice leis, but there's just something about just going down to Mauna Kea Street. And if you get lucky and get parking, you can pop into the crack seed store next door and buy some Chinese snacks, too.
Oh, thanks so much for that. Just wonderful stories. You know, it's the aloha. It's the lei and then what you get back. Because, you know, you give that aloha when you purchase a lei, right?
And you feel it. It touches you, definitely.
Yeah, it does. We have another call coming in from Maui. Larry, what's on your mind?
Yes, how are you? I have a friend, actually a Hanai daughter, that is a new generation of lei makers. And her company is called Hawaii Flora and Fauna. And what she does is that she sources her flowers from local, you know, local trees, local bushes, and makes beautiful, beautiful leis. Also, invasive species and all different kinds of seeds and nuts, and makes these leis that are extraordinary. She made them for my daughter's wedding, where instead of giving rings, they gave leis, and all the leis for both me and the other family and husband and the wife were all native Hawaiian, locally grown flowers. And it's encouraging that, you know, young kids are getting into what they're doing today. That, you know, the stories that you're telling are fabulous about, you know, the old lay makers, but it's a new generation, and her name is Lauren Shear, and she has a website, and she was just on the cover of Maui Magazine.
Yes, I saw that. She's doing wonderful things with all kinds of different types of flowers. I'm wearing a lei right now, with something made of miniature crown flower. And I noticed, I think she was using some of hers in that magazine. But, you know, very creative, innovative thinkers, and it's nice to see it. You know, so there's hope with the younger generation interested in flowers and the flower business.
You know, it's interesting also just on talking about customs and fashion and style and things like that. On the mainland, lei are, from time to time, you hear sort of, you know, how there are more at, for example, graduations and college graduations, universities.
One thing I've sort of picked up and I've noticed in my own experience, and that was sort of amplified by this last caller, is that in the past, the giving of lei, the culture of lei, was really more of a kind of a cultural norm. It was part something we did. And leis were basically standardized products, you know, dendrobium orchids or double carnations, and they were sort of standard types of leis that we used to make. But recently, and I've seen this in other occasions also, lei making is becoming an art form, a creative art form. It's a real craft, and younger generation people are using the idea of a lei, but bringing in all kinds of other materials that they use to create these wonderful, beautiful works of art. I mean, they're literally works of art. And so as far as the commercial value or in terms of how this would be commercialized in terms of a commodity, it's hard to say, but it represents a kind of refinement of the idea of the lei from something that's more of a commercial phenomenon, I mean a cultural phenomenon, to more of an aesthetic, you know, sort of artistic endeavor, which is really beautiful. And hopefully at some point, like this caller was suggesting, bringing it to this level, you know, her Hanai daughter might be able to sell, commercialize, and make a business of it so that, you know, it can spread and grow, you know, within society, within the economy.
You know, I did get some stats from the Department of Agriculture, and it was interesting to see just where we're at as a business.
Right.
And lei flowers, the trend is going down.
It's going down, exactly. Yeah. So it's not too encouraging that as far as an overall economic activity is concerned. But I think the way for it to survive is to innovate and become creative, where it basically morphs into a different form, and hopefully it will have some commercial viability as we go forward. But on the other hand, as you were saying, Bill, too, on the mainland, people are beginning to recognize or value the flower garland. You know, they may not call it a lei, but as a token of celebration, as a token of milestones in one's life. And that might be another spark that will give more impetus to the growth of the flower industry as, you know, as part of the whole lei making process.
You know, the Department of Agriculture says that they only have one statistician on staff, and they don't track the different types of flowers that are really grown anymore. If you look at the old statistics that they provided, you know, in the 1990s, they listed the types of flowers that we were growing and the volume, and we just don't do that anymore. So we don't really have a good handle on that.
Yeah, I think the latest statistics that we have, which you were so kind to share with me, you know, stated that as of 2018, the floricultural nursery industry was about $78 million statewide. But of that, lei flowers was only about 3%. So it's declining from, you know, 2008 to 2017, so roughly in the 10-year period. So yeah, it's not too encouraging, you know, from an economic point of view. So hopefully the sort of redefinition of the lei as an object, you know, as a flower garland, you know, in terms of a more artistic, creative, you know, sort of way of understanding it, will give new life, you know, to the culture of the lei.
You know, we've been talking about the history of lei sellers on the conversation this morning, including some segments from our partners at the Oral History Center at the University of Hawaii. Bill Dorman is here with the last of those interview segments.
Yeah, Catherine, you know, it's not just the lei sellers that we're hearing from the oral histories, but also those still working in the field now. One theme you hear in all of this is how often the work involves the whole family, everyone just pitching in. Another example of this, Maile Lee was born in Paia on Maui in 1933, Hawaiian Caucasian. When she was six, she moved to Honolulu with her brothers and with her single mom. Her mom then remarried. Her new stepfather got into the lei business along with his sister, Gladys Chung, who opened Gladys's lei stand on Lagoon Drive. Now, that lei stand was so successful that within a couple of months, the husband opened his own lei stand, Eddie and Alice's stand. And in 1962, control of that passed to daughter Miley, who changed the name to Miley's lei stand. And after many years of hard work that she started at a very young age.
What grade were you in when you started going out to the lei stand?
I think it was the sixth grade. I would have been 12 years old. I thought it was a treat.
Oh yeah?
Yes, I thought, oh, this is wonderful. But I found out different eventually. It was hard work. It wasn't such a treat. Because the old folks really made you work. If anything, I think we were very disciplined as to how we performed. Everything was business, no playing.
Did you do the stringing or did you do the selling?
We strung and sold. That was considered old. There were people down at the lace stands on Lagoon Drive that sold and strung lace. From my swear, as soon as they're 3-4 years old, if they could hold a needle and pick up a flower, they would start stringing.
So who are your customers when you were on the trucks on the Green Drive?
Well, some of us had regular customers, but majority of them would just be people that needed leis, and they drive up in their cars alongside of our trucks.
Were they local people or were they...
The majority of our buyers then were locals. Tourism wasn't quite popular then, although it was definitely starting. Mm-hmm. But it was more of the locals that bought our flowers.
Have military customers?
We had a lot of military people. After the war, they were still here. But still, I say the majority of our business came from the locals. Mm-hmm. The military plane would come in every afternoon, 3:30. And that's when we had the majority of our business would be the military people then. But shortly after that, United Airlines started up, and that's when tourism really
Do you know what year
blossomed.
They started, United Airlines?
I'd be guessing, but I would say in the latter part of 1946.
So you folks were out there already?
We were out in Lagoon Drive still on our trucks. And of course, Pan Am was here already. That's when, in my mind, that tourism really came into Hawaii. Was 49, 50, 51. It was a good time to sell leis. I didn't mind working because my parents were busy and we were all busy. And the monies were good. It was such a wonderful atmosphere at the old airport. The old cliche, it was so full of aloha spirit, it was even more than that. It wasn't just the aloha spirit. It was the people, you know. It was more than the aloha spirit. I can see it, you know, but I can't express to you how beautiful this old shack of an airport was.
That old shack of an airport destined for a lot of changes throughout the 50s. Miley Lee was 52 when she did that interview we just heard that was recorded in 1985.
We have several calls on the line. Jesse from Kauai.
Oh, aloha no. Aloha. I hope this finds you. having fun, enjoying your flower lady you have. It sounds beautiful from here. It's, you know, really coincidence, I think, or maybe you grow into your name, but my middle name is Leah. Mm-hmm. And I now am creating a farm, a lay farm specifically for education and awareness and more flowers. There's never been enough flowers. I've been making lei my whole life, and it's the best gift you could give, for sure.
Well, mahalo for staying in the business and making lei and growing all those flowers.
Yeah, I just want to also comment a little bit on what Bill was saying as far as it being a family operation, because when you said that, I had this memory of my mother telling us when they were in their prime, they had about 10 or 15 workers, and they even had a little bunkhouse where they used to stay. And my mother's job was to make a pot of rice for 20 people every night. And she used to have a pot, literally, that was about 2 feet in diameter, and she would cook it on a fire stove, you know, a wooden fire stove. She'd have to mix the rice and then, you know, clean it and then put the pot on and sit there and watch the rice as it cooked. And then she had to serve, you know, 15, 20 workers plus the family. And my uncle and her older brother and my sister and my mother used to get up at 3 and 4 in the morning to go out and pick flowers, to load them on the truck, and, you know, and then she would go down with my grandfather to Mauna Kea Street and down to the boats, you know, to sell the flowers. So they grew up, you know, on the farm supplying the flowers to the lei sellers who were young children, you know, making the leis.
That's wonderful, wonderful history. We have another call coming in from Kapoho. Carl?
Aloha. Thank you for your show. I just wanted to give a shout out to two people that I was lucky to know. Hana Lakalesa. She lived in Puako, and she was a famous lei maker on the Big Island. And she supplied Mauna Kea Beach Hotel with all their leis for years and years, and I used to help her in 1974 picking crown flowers, and I would take them over to her place. And I also want to do a shout out to Doreen Henderson on the Hilo side, and she is our feather lei expert, and she's still teaching the people how to do feather work. And one thing I want to say about these people that I noticed is it's not any different in their moments of life from when they're stringing lei, the way their hands move, the way everything is so aloha. But it's the same when they pick the flower, and it's the same when they walk across the room. So it was a different thing because it was like something they carried with themselves every second, and they still do. And I just want to thank everybody. And they lived in aloha, and they put that aloha in every lei.
Mahalo for that memory. We have another call from Honoka'a. Janice.
Hi. I seem to remember when I lived in Honolulu in the 70s that when I wanted a white ginger lei, we just went downtown and got one. Do the white ginger bloom year-round? Does anyone know how to make them do it?
Gosh, I don't know that. I don't know the answer. I know that sometimes if you drive up Tantalus, you can see white and yellow ginger growing on the side of the road.
I know that there is a seasonal variation in terms of white ginger, just because from a consumer side, wanting to go and get it as a fan of it, of that, sometimes it's not. And it's dependent in terms of rain and also intensity of rain.
Well, we've come to the end of our show. Mahalo to our in-studio guests, Greg Pye, and to the University of Hawaii's Oral History Center for bringing back those voices and helping us to ponder the future of our lei industry. More lei seller stories can be heard at the department's Oral History Podcast and Talk Story presentation entitled Hawaii's Lei Sellers, Now and Then. That's at Windward Oahu Community College on Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And thanks, Bill Dorman, for sharing this hour with us. And mahalo to you, the listener, for joining us on today's show, sharing the aloha of our lei history. And if your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, contact the Talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.